Okay.
Okay. All right, I thought you might have a cell phone or something, Russ. Okay. Anyway, don't look like Russ is going to be with us. All right, Logan, Gary, you're on.
Yeah.
Russ says that he's in a rented motel room in New Orleans, and, you know, I don't know if he has a cell phone or whatever here, but it does look like he has internet connectivity, which is nice. Any case here, I was ranting and raving. I was looking at this stupid crap, and you have these niggers going ahead and, you know, going ahead and whatever. Why, hey, poor nigger was running around. 17-year-old nigger's dead. Well, he's dead. He's dead not because he was going where he shouldn't be going. He's dead because he circled around and jumped on this smaller beaner kike and started banging his head into the, you know, into the cement pavement, and the beater kike was, well, you know, yelling and screaming, not getting too much help, so he goes ahead, he pulls a gun and shoots the nigger right in the chest here, and you have a dead nigger. You know what I mean? For about, what, a month and a half, the damn local pigs, they knew it was an open shut case. Hell, the guy's guilty here. So essentially, I'm looking at the little Ecuadorian mother, and I'm looking at this bald little critter here. I was looking at this Jeffrey Toobin, some sort of Jew. He used to be a New York State judge, yapping about how it's acceptable for the prostitutors to delay giving out exculpatory evidence. It was up to me. You catch the old prostitutor doing that, what you do is you take a branding iron and you start branding his hide. You know what I mean? Publicly, and then you go ahead, wait for it to heal, and you skin it out. I bet there wouldn't be very many prostitutors pulling this shit, right? Yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, the prostitution tried to get a third-degree child abuse case here because it was a 17-year-old nigger who got shot. You know what I mean? Stupid shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
well, that's exactly the case here. I mean, as I said, it was up to me, essentially, the judge, the prosecutor. You go ahead and take their kids. You go ahead and get a 200-pound nigger, and you start letting that nigger just beat their heads into the concrete. And essentially, if they say bang or stop, then I guess essentially they pled guilty to treason. You know what I mean? Or you can let the nigger go ahead and beat their. I mean, essentially, if you're going to go ahead and take away the right of self-defense, you don't have any right. I mean, I'd like to go ahead and see Piers Morgan put that worthless bastard.
Well, yeah. I've been reading up on the Zimmer thing lately, and basically, they brought in, they want to make this big deal that a long time ago used to have some racial rights in Florida, just like the rest of the South, and Jackie Robinson could play baseball in Sanford, Florida.
What does that have to do with anything?
The thing is, they've got a black police chief.
Mm-hmm.
He's married to a white woman.
Yeah.
He's as black as Ace of Spades. He's married to the white woman. They brought him in from Chicago. He knows how to deal with violent blacks. And
mm-hmm.
he's basically saying that he didn't come out so many words and say that he thought that Zimmerman should be acquitted or that Zimmerman would be acquitted, but he said that if Zimmerman is acquitted, that his police department is prepared to reach out to the black community where they will not have violent riots. So, you know, the Jews are stirring this shit up. I mean, they got this black police chief married to a white woman. He don't really want riots. I don't think he could really care less whether Zimmerman's acquitted or not. And he's, you know, basically, if it wasn't for the Jew, there would not be a nigger or beaner or non-white problem except for the Jews with our media and, of course, the Jew judges. And, you know, basically, the whole court system is going to be no justice for the white, for the Israelite man. So, I mean, the best thing to do is just avoid this, and it's really not our, I mean, the courts are
Oh, no. Harold Compton, you know, pointed out quite correctly here. What they're doing is they're telling white people, if you get assaulted by a nigger, essentially when you're getting your head beat in, you're being assaulted by a nigger. You don't have a right to shoot that nigger if he's a 19-year-old nigger. You don't have a right to defend yourself.
If Trayvon Martin had been black and he killed another black man, then it wouldn't have even made the front page news. Okay?
Well,
I mean, Chicago, they get blacks to each other all the time and they don't give a damn. It's like they want to make, Al Sharpton and all these people want to make a point that it's a race or a hate crime or a race thing. And I think in this particular case, I mean, Martin's dad and Zimmerman's dad were both Freemasons and all. But I think in this particular case, I mean, I personally, he wasn't a security guard. He was a neighborhood watch. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. Security guards have the right to shoot to kill if they're on the property they're paid to protect.
Why in the world, let's say a 17-year-old nigger had gone ahead and doubled around and killed an undercover off-duty cop. Okay, would we have even had this trial?
Hey, he'd be 17 years old, and there'd be all this stuff about, well, he's a juvenile, he can't be tried as an adult, he's had a rough life. He probably, if he killed an off-duty cop, he probably wouldn't even spend one year in jail. You know? I mean,
well, I disagree. What happened to pigs would have gone ahead and right. I mean, that nigger wouldn't have made it to trial. Essentially, Zog Babylon needs. Essentially, I've seen it all the time here. What happens to these people? They appoint their pigs. Their pigs can lie. Their pigs can do whatever the hell they want to. See, that's why.
Okay, you're saying that police officers are above the law, even if it's. Okay, so
they're totally above the law. They're totally above the law. That's why I point out here. It's not only the police officer and their families which are to be put to death. Essentially, it's the people who hired them. You know what I mean? The people who are... I mean, essentially, your pig commits a crime. Your pig commits a crime, you've committed a crime. If you've committed a crime as a regime criminal, your children and grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren commit a crime too. They have to pay for the crimes you commit. The entire portion here. That's why there was laws against Ahab. It wasn't enough when Ahab killed Naboth and his, you know, a number of his family. It wasn't enough just to kill Ahab and Jezebel. Ahab and Jezebel's entire family who were in that area had to be put to death from his other wives. No, I mean, he had a number of sons. He had 72 sons. You know that Jezebel didn't squeeze out all 72 of them. Essentially, all of Ahab's children had to die. But not only did Ahab's children have to die, those people who supported Ahab, Ahab's Baal priests. Jehu went ahead and said, well, Ahab worshipped Baal a little, Jehu will worship him a lot. He went ahead and he brought in all these Baal priests, and he put them and their families to death, too. He pretty well exterminated everyone who supported Ahab that they could find. And essentially, that's my point here. I mean, what happens is that you don't go ahead and just, I mean, essentially, as far as I'm concerned, one policeman commits a crime. And another policeman doesn't go ahead and essentially summarily execute or try that policeman. You know, the entire police force is guilty of crimes, and so is those who appointed them. I've been beaten up with the permission in 1995 by this beaner pig named Chandler, with the permission of the Granby City Council. They knew damn well I was being beaten up while handcuffed. You know what I mean? Oh, he was going ahead and pulling out my hair and screaming about how the Granby City Council was terrified of me, and I was going to stop it. Essentially, I mean, here I'm handcuffed. Here he shoves me up against a filing cabinet, and essentially I fall over it. Then jumps on top of me. I'm handcuffed. You know what I mean? Oh, heck. That piece of shit probably might have killed me. But essentially, somebody called the Newton County Sheriff's, and here's this other pig. His name is Richard Levins. He tortured a nigger. He was going ahead and caused me a whole bunch of trouble when I was in jail for this bogus stuff here. As far as I'm concerned here, if you work stealing white children from white families, you and your entire family need to die. No, Neil, there's no question here. We're not going to argue as to what, you know, how guilty you are. You're altogether guilty. You are a part of this. You need to die. Now, whether or not you die a little bit better or something like that, and maybe, if there's a DNA test and you have white children, well, maybe they can be allowed to live and maybe redeem themselves for the crimes that their fathers and great-grandfathers have committed. But it's got to be understood is that, hey, you're getting mercy. You're not getting justice. You're not going to get justice. You're getting a totally unmerited pardon. And this thing needs to be horrific. But, folks, I'm not even worried about having a quote. Now, I go ahead and talk about the Dzerzhinsky protocols. I don't think there's going to be any such protocols. I believe, and this is sort of undercutting some of what I think here, I don't believe there's going to be 10,000 warlords because essentially you're talking about order among chaos. And what the Bible says, there's not going to be any order at all when Christ comes back. He's going to be coming back to save the remnant. But what I try to do, talk to, is those who are white, who are not Christian identity, essentially who want to understand that there is no way out except going through this fire that needs to be done. And I'm hoping that, well, hey, the white ones will understand that they needed to do what they had to do and choose dual seed line Christian identity to justify whatever they have to do. This is a matter of survival. This is a matter of racial survival. Essentially, unlike all the other little movement tards, I'm not trying to build any organization. I'm not trying to tell you to set up a compound. I'm not trying to tell you to do anything. I'm trying to tell you that you're best off watching, seeing what is going on, observing, but in many cases, just simply pulling yourself out as much as you can from this system. Don't say anything. You don't need to say anything. Yahweh knows your heart. And essentially, you know your deeds. And you pull yourself out of that, you and your family. And essentially, I do think, and when this Civil War II, there will be a number of horrific things here. And folks, I don't believe when you end up having 300 million Zogling Quiggers and Mamsers and Ass Clowns dead on this continent, in this country, and you only have a few million white people left, that Christ is coming back for this remnant, I don't believe that they are going to be held responsible. Those who went ahead and made this evil inevitable, they'll be responsible, although it won't really matter because they'll be dead. Okay? Alright? So, any case here, anyway, Gary, what do you think of our little dialogue?
Well, I've discussed a little bit with this, and I guess I understand from the human standpoint of what people go through and
yeah,
the fact that they want to, avenge the characters.
Yeah.
I think that in old time scripture, this is my opinion now,
yeah,
since you asked me, they did what they did, and then they didn't do what they even should have did. You guys read and made a very, very pointed issue that Joshua himself, and seeing what Moses did, where he made his errors, and then Joshua went along and made the same error He let the people fool him, and he made an agreement with them.
Yeah.
I just think that it's going to be a little different in Revelations when Yadi Vahi makes his final decision. I think he's going to make that the judgment seat for the house of Israel. He separates them out in chapter 21, verse 8, very clearly on what they stand for and what they did. Liars, murderers, okay? And this is what these people are. Many times these are people who beat and do what you say they do. I don't doubt that it happens.
Yeah.
And I've known people who have been beaten.
It's not always going to be terrible, Jerry. It's not our place to basically, I mean, you're always going to take care of all these people, and we don't have to go in and round them up and take care of all. I mean, there's not enough Israelites to round up all the,
the evil doers. I agree if you look at where Christ says he's coming for the remnant and says there'll be a great tribulation such as never was nor never will be. I'm not really talking about an organized purging or jailing or punishment of regime criminals. Now I do talk about that here, and I think it will occur in some instances on a hit or miss basis. It'll be happening in places where the true Israelites are strong enough to by themselves, deal with it. Now it does go ahead and say in Joel chapter 2 about mighty men here. I remember this, blow the horn, let Zion hear, for God's day is now at hand. Let the people tremble in this day of clouds and gloominess. Troops so great and mighty strong, there has never been the like. And as horsemen do they run. I mean, you go ahead, you read and say Joel chapter 2 to where in many cases it looks like there will be avengers. Now, looking at in the case of Joshua here, it goes ahead, in under the law of Moses, there were no policemen, there were no jails. What was called the avenger of blood? If someone went ahead and killed a member of your family or friends, you had a duty to hunt them down and kill them. Essentially, they were the avengers of blood. And in many cases, it was a self-help system. And pretty well Samuel said is that you're going to be doing away with a lot of that. You're going to have the king decide who lives and who dies. Not the local people. You're going to have a king over an overall nation. Right? Saul was set over all 13 tribes of the house of Israel. And in many cases, you go ahead and see where even David ended up having on some of his mighty men, some of his policemen. He ended up having, say, Uriah the Hittite. You had non-Israelite mighty men who enforced David's will, didn't you? So Samuel said, hey, you set up yourself a king, you're setting yourself up for a world of hurt. But you got to understand is that there was what? After Joshua, there was essentially for about 17 or 20 years, a generation or so after he was dead. I was going ahead and pointing out is that other than Joshua, when Joshua died, you would have had some people who may have been 19 years old before the age of responsibility. You might have had some 19-year-old men who turned 60 when they crossed over Jordan, and 26 years later, when Joshua dies, essentially they would have been, 86, 87, 88, about 86 or 87 years old, right? So when Joshua died, you might have had some of them who lived. I don't think most of them did live that long, and, essentially Joshua had extended days, just like Moses did. But you probably had some people who would have been children, under 19 years of age. When, you know, who would have gone ahead and served in the mud pits, who would have served in the brick pits, who had been slaves, who essentially got to live to not only cross over Jordan, but to get their inheritance. Correct?
I think that's real.
Yeah. So, in many cases, you know, what we're pointing out is that, well, getting back to this here, I think, you know, when I say here, the whole purpose of that is for these regime criminals to read what I write and to see, you know, essentially to see what is in store for them. What is in store for them, and they essentially, look, you're going to die, but you're not going to die well. You're going to go, I mean, essentially, they're going to do evil. What I want them to do is that I want them, just like most policemen, they're in fear. They know they deserve to die. They know they deserve to be skinned out. They know they deserve, you know, all these air critters. They go ahead and they get on the news and they're so sanctimonious. They're so self-righteous and they act like it's a good thing. Like in the case of what? This bitch at the Children's Haven up in there and say that, you know, hey, there's 1,000 people who need to have their kids taken away. You know what I mean? Essentially, I think if you go ahead and you destroy one family, you and your entire family and everybody who's associated with you needs to die and have your family destroyed. One family is enough to go, you know, one act of treason, one act of racial treason is enough to put you to death. You know what I mean? You know, no, there's no excuse for it. You know what I mean? Now, under law of Moses, essentially whatever else was not mentioned was essentially a free ride. You could essentially do whatever you want to do as long as it was not specifically forbidden. And there were no quote police, and there was no provision for the police. These three cities of refuge, each on the north side, the center, and the south of each side, six cities, three on each side of the Jordan, were set to where if you accidentally killed someone, you could run, and essentially there would be a little bit of a trial, not like the Jordan, you know, there would be a hearing to go ahead and determine intent, whether or not it was an accidental killing or not. Now, I'd be a little bit careful about going underneath ladders or some other place because you end up having a bunch of people who are somewhat careless, you know, in how they go about their life. But, you know, essentially, they were subject to, well, arrest outside those cities of sanctuary. If they went back, even though they accidentally killed somebody, they went back outside that city of sanctuary, essentially the Avengers of Blood could go ahead and kill them. You know, they had to make it. They had to make it to these cities of sanctuary, and they had to stay there. You understand what I'm saying? Perhaps, you know, throughout their life here. So it didn't pay to be too careless when running around. Essentially, what it was is that it was about as much as possible local, you know, local and family and tribal rule. And you read in the case of Moses where you had this man with nothing but daughters, can this man with his daughters inherit? And the answer is that yes, the daughters can inherit if there is no son. You understand what I'm saying? So the entire portion of Israel was to, you know, they were promised essentially land, not only in the land of Canaan, they were promised it in Syria all the way to the Euphrates if they behaved. And in many cases, the land of Israel acted, I believe, like a place of, oh, a place of breeding Israelites to intermingle with the other Adamites, the good Adamites, the ones who didn't drown, you know, during the first Zog Babylon in the Tarim Basin, and thus essentially the white world became Israelite. At least that's what I think. Okay? So, in any case, you know, they're talking about what may end up happening here. I mean, let's say there are a whole bunch of riots here. Does any of these, I'm looking at this, you know, nigger beaner, ex-prostitutor, and essentially she wants to hang old Zimmermamser, you know what I mean? Right? And they're talking about riots. They're talking about actual riots. Niggers are going to riot if Zimmerman is found not guilty. You understand what I'm saying? So, in any case here, I'm just going on here. Gary, I see your point in that I don't think there's going to be, you know, there might be some places, I don't think there's going to be very many places where Israelite rule is going to punish these regime criminals. From what I gather, Christ is going to return. You read from Revelations chapter 4 to 18 to where things get bad for 3.5 years, and they get even worse for 3.5. There's not very many people left alive, and then Christ returns, and I don't see in that to where there's going to be any state set up to punish these Uyghurs and these regime criminals and these Mamzers and these Jews. What I see is that Christ coming and there being blood up to a horse's bridle, and essentially he saves the remnant. He's only coming for the remnant. And then you have your first judgment, you know, your first judgment to where the dead in Christ, the righteous, are resurrected to become kings and priests. And then in Revelations chapter 2, or I'm sorry, later on in the chapter, you have a 1,000-year period where Satan is put in, and then you read about some more rebellion. And then later on in Revelations chapter 20, you have the judgment for those who, well, essentially the question of it is whether or not they will pass or not pass. It'll be pass-fail, okay? I don't believe that the non-whites will be part of that judgment. I don't believe that Jews will be part of that judgment. I believe that only Uyghurs will be part of that judgment. Okay?
Well, that's what the word says. Revelation is chapter 20, 21, in my estimation, all the way through. But the first 14 verses, there's more doctrine there based on what Yad Yahvah is going to do to the house of Jacob Israel,
mm-hmm.
and then anything else, and the promises that he gave us, okay, for the true ones. And he even said there, I think it's verse 3 or 4, don't you shed a tear when you see what I'm about to do. This is what's going to happen. Don't shed a tear.
No, you don't shed a tear.
He didn't say that we would have anything to do with it. I'm not saying it's not possible, but he didn't say there. I will do this. I will take care of these people and these, in verse 8, the liars and murderers. As I said to you before, we talked there a little bit, there's payday someday for these people.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds like you're putting things off. But if, for instance, if the government today, and I've watched it work for many, many years, and followed quite a few cases, if the government in any way, shape, or form thought that an individual was a problem, they'd have you locked up before 11 o'clock tonight.
Mm-hmm.
They'd come out and surround your house or do what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, they listen very carefully to all these things, they listen very carefully to all these things. If they feel that there's a possibility, okay, then they're out to get that person. They'll surround the house, they'll do a lot of things, they'll even set up situations everything is done, and they say, well, you know, we've heard it a couple times, but, you know, this doesn't sound like a real serious situation. These are just some people talking and trying to air out their grievances.
Mm-hmm.
When it's not, this is just my feeling. And I've seen it work that way, but when the minute I have seen someone who is going to attempt to do this, these deeds to the enemy, they're there quickly. And they'll bring 30-some different agencies to your house, and I've seen it happen, okay? So they just consider the source, so to speak. Sometimes they miss a little bit, but you won't get that many. They'll have 35 agencies of the government agency at your doorstep or at your cave or wherever you be. So I think that we're going to come to the point that the people who go through the Great Tribulation, they get to tell the people who rise after, you know, the saints that are changed and the dead in Yahweh shall rise. They get to tell them what it was like to eat manna in the desert, what it was like to go through this Great Tribulation. So you surely don't want to go through this, folks. I'm a witness. I went through it. You know, we'll say, maybe I'm not. Maybe I won't look good. But if I was talking to somebody who was resurrected, I could say, this is what happened when we were out in the desert for 40 years. This is what happened when we were put in slavery. This is what happened in the latter days of the Great Tribulation. I think we're going to, the people who lived through these things are going to be the witness to the ones that didn't go through it. So they don't go back to the same old issues that Israel always falls for. Okay, making agreements and doing things. And perhaps there'll be nobody to make an agreement with. I would like to think that's the way it is. There won't be any mistakes to be able to be made, because there won't be mistakes to have to make a decision like Moses and Joshua and our different forefathers had to make. So I see it very clearly that it's going to be Yadi Vahi that's going to step in. Most of the Israelite men today, they haven't got enough of gumption to take care of anything, okay? And furthermore, we don't have the laws in force. You've got, what'd you say, how many million it was? It might be, whatever it is in this country, there are Judeo. Out of that whole Judeo force, you might have 1% of the people who are in these churches who understand the law at all. You might have 1%. Okay, so we don't have anybody who understands what they should do if they had to do it. So I think the only thing of understanding is that Yadi Vahi says, look, you ignorant Israelites, I will take care of it. I will take care of it. It'll be payday someday. You may get to see it. You know, I think we will, because he said right there, don't you shed a tear when you see this happen. Okay? And I think you'll get to see the vengeance that Yadi Vahi brings upon these people who did these evil, evil things to yourself personally, to your family, to whatever. Family done evil to you, whatever. It's Yadi Vahi says, don't you touch the apple of my eye. Don't you think that's a serious statement, Martin and Logan?
Yeah, I think they see what's going on. Sort of like Ben Bernanke, the Jew boy.
Sure.
Essentially, he's been inflating the currency for what? Oh, since, well, you know, at least 5 years, you know, big time. I mean, they've been doing it before, but essentially they're inflating it more and more and more. And, well, let's see, today they were bitching that the Republican House of Representatives went ahead and cut, you know, food stamps off from the agricultural bill. And Obongo and the rest here are all bitching here because, well, they sort of think that niggers need to eat. You know what I mean? So he said he was going to veto it. So, in many cases, you end up having to wear there's less and less and less ability to keep things running. And, you know, more and more, you know, as you have fewer and fewer and fewer white people who are able to maintain it, and you have more and more and more and more MUDs who, you know, just mess it up. You know, they're no, you know, just because they crossed the border, they didn't get, you know, I mean, geography is not genetics. Just because a beaner crosses, he doesn't become a white man. You know, a nigger is not a little white man, is not an Israelite in a little nigger suit. And as you have more and more and more of these, you know, creatures here coming in, and fewer and fewer and fewer whites here, you're going to have a third world nation here, and the empire is not going to be maintained. So yes, even if you're not particularly religious, you realize, I mean, I have a book here about, you know, guerrilla warfare, and they said that about 43% of the time the guerrillas are successful. But you got to understand is that when the guerrillas are fighting against a mighty evil empire, essentially they're successful, you know, eventually in one way or the other, 100% of the time, because how many of the mighty evil empires of history are around anymore? And, you know, every mighty evil empire destroys its founding stock, its founding white stock. Destroys its founding stock. And as a result, you don't see the Assyrians making history, you don't see the Persians making much history, you don't see the Greeks or the Romans making much history. From what I gather, Russ was in, and he was saying that London looked like Nigger Town, a good deal of it, Pachyville or whatever. You have more and more and more, you know, just like this character here. You end up having all the niggers sort of thinking that, you know, it's hilarious here. The nigger gook beaner, you're the beaner Jew, ought to be treated like a white man and sent to prison for life, or, you know, in case of manslaughter, for 25 years or whatever. And to where essentially you go ahead and you shoot a nigger that is beating your head into the ground, well, hey, you can go to prison. So what's that going to go ahead and tell niggers that they can do here? I mean, hey, they can go ahead and attack anybody they want in Florida? Is there any rule of law? Is there anything else here? So as things go like that here, yes, they're going to fall apart more and more and more and more. You don't have to be Christian Identity to realize that this mighty evil empire has a limited shelf life, just like all the other mighty evil empires do. You don't have to be Christian Identity to understand that. To understand is that, no, the current situation is not tenable for very much longer. Right? Yeah, I mean, me, you, and Logan, well, we're dual seedline Christian Identity believers. We're Israelites, and yes, we have a tendency to agree, you know, in most parts here about everything else. But let's say even if you aren't Christian Identity, you know, I mean, I don't see really anybody who thinks that this situation is going to last, you know, for even much longer, much less forever. You know, would you say, right?
I think it's interesting.
We agree on that. Martin, because I mean, basically the Jews are preparing for the new world order, and they're pushing this, and you know, they're just hoping enough white men, white people don't wake up and try to resist. But, you know, most of the white people are going to the Judeo-Christian churches, and they love the Jews, and so they're not going to, they may bitch and complain under their breath. You know, I see it happening slowly. I see the white race that used to not like race mixing, and now they're tolerating it. They used to not like a lot of the evil stuff that's going on now, along to, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, and slowly over time they're indoctrinated. And so, you know, when Gary grew up as a young man, the country was a lot different. And it's taken two or three generations or so from the time when Gary was a little boy, that the white race is nowhere near what they were when they were Gary's age. So even before Yahweh completely steps in, because when Yahweh comes back, he's going to be in charge. There's not going to be 10,000 warlords running the show.
No, I don't think it's going to be run the show either. But what I do point out for those who listen to this show, I point out, don't send your money to David Duck thinking you are going to get anywhere. You're just going to make.
Well, David Duck and John Black, supposedly both of them are working for the FBI. They're paid informants. I mean, both of them are, Don Black and David Duke are supposedly both snitches.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but whether it's true or not, I know at least in David, I don't know about Don Black as much, but David Duke's all about money for him.
Yeah, it's all about money. It's all about money for the Duck. You know what
it's
I mean?
All about for him. He's, you know, doing all your money. He's not going to save the white race. He's not.
I mean, and James Wickstrom, James.
But the thing is, and actually, David Duke has been on shows that have had known Jews, you know, supposed good Jews that were speaking out against the Zionists, and he said he was best friends with them. He said, this guy's great. There was a particular Jew, and David Duke went to a conference with him and spoke with him, and this Jew was anti-Zionist. And David Duke was good buddies with him. So David Duke is just supposedly anti-Zionist. He's not anti-Jew.
Yeah.
And he's along with, Mongrels or Jews, as long as they're saying what he thinks, you know, he wants. I mean, basically, he's just a politician, and he's not dual C-blind. And so, basically, that's the problem we have with all these white nationalists. They don't accept Yahweh. They don't accept his laws. And they don't understand the reasons that we're in the problem that we're in, collectively and individually, is we're not obeying Yahweh's laws. Now, we can do that individually if we choose to do so, but collectively, the white race as a whole is never going to obey Yahweh's laws again until Yahweh comes back and sets things right. Okay? That's just a fact.
Okay.
Q.I. and Gary are not going to set things right. Without Yahweh, we could do nothing. And all the glory and all the power is Yahweh's. And all we can hope to do is to be obedient sons of Yahweh and do His will. And if the time comes, He wants us to be in charge of something or do something for Him. That's all we can hope, is to fear Yahweh and keep His commandments. And to walk humbly. Is that right, Gary?
I agree fully with that.
Okay.
With that analogy, it's difficult to come to an admission of that just because of who we think we are. Okay. But the question would be to ask is this: as you listen to Bernicke speak, and I happen to catch a little bit of news, not a lot. Players are leaving off. But how long do you think this country would exist financially if the Fed wasn't putting all this money every day to run into the stock market?
It'd be gone immediately.
And it doesn't go to the private investors. The private investors are pretty much out of the stock market in a big investment. It goes to the corporate investors. And you know who they all are. And so therefore, he's propping up the corporate investors of America or whatever corporation they would be with whatever country they work. So they're propping the stock market up. Has the unemployment got any better for the working class people? The answer is no. Has the job increased for working people? No. Have we put more manufacturing jobs together? No. As agriculture, they talked last at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning on the Ag Show. The older timers have been through where the banks start foreclosing when commodities went down. if they pull corn down to $3 a bushel, soybeans down to $8-$9 a bushel, brings other things in line, they'll be able to foreclose on millions and millions of acres, just like they've always did. And that same old game is going to play out. They're talking about how, this is the experts, not me talking, I'm just listening and repeating, they're talking about how literally thousands and thousands of these young farmers, and I watch them around here, are into debt right past their eyeballs, and when the bank is ready, they just foreclose. They don't have to have any reason, rhyme, or anything. And they just foreclose, and they start all over again. But there's a point in time when the usury is the law that Yadi Vahi talks about. Thou shalt not charge usury to the brother. And just to fill you in, I wrote a whole thing for my graduate thing from the tool and die at Wayne State University on usury, okay? And no one could show me in the economics department that I attended there at Wayne State University. You know, it's a very liberal college even back in the 50s.
Wayne State, is that, that's Detroit, ain't it?
Yeah, Detroit, Wayne State.
Yeah.
Nobody could show me where the penny came from for the interest. Never mind 6 pennies, or 8 pennies, or 9 pennies, or 12 pennies. Where does that come from in an economical society? Yadi Vahi had it very clear. There is nowhere to get this usury, this interest money, okay? And what are they running the whole country on? Interest.
Yeah.
Debt, interest.
Well, yeah, they're printing up. They're printing up. They're literally running printing. They're literally printing up. We're making new money, and you know the whole why is that depositors. What they do is that they put it in there and then they lend it out fraction reserve. No, what these banks are essentially doing is they're counterfeiting the currency. They're going ahead and just simply making it up, and then they're just lending it out, then relying on some of it to come back. And what they're doing is they're making a claim on actual property and assets owned by white people. Well, as time goes on, you have fewer and fewer white people who are out of debt, who essentially are able to, you know, create much of anything, just like these young farmers. Let's say they get foreclosed on. They get foreclosed on, like, well, this is about maybe 30 years ago. 30 years ago, the big pork producers, what they did is that they decided to pretty well finish the small hog producers in Iowa and a number of other places. So what they did is that they cut the price of pork to where farmers were essentially, they used to essentially, you know, spend $40 on raising a hog and get $48. Well, what they did is they cut the price of the hogs to about $28 a piece. They cut the price of pork really low to where essentially all these farmers in Iowa, other places where they grew their grain, couldn't, you know, essentially were losing about $12 a hog. And they couldn't make it up on volume. Because the more volume they had, the faster they went bankrupt. And this happened about, what, 20, 30 years ago. So once you go ahead and you destroy these farmers, and here they are, they're not actually organically producing something. Essentially what they're doing is they're putting in chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, fertilizers, which can be profitable for corporations when oil is, what, $20 a barrel. But when oil is, what, $100, $150 a barrel, there is just simply no way to run anything. So as a result, all you have is just debt and debt and debt, and you have no way of paying it back here. Yeah, when you have a population which is essentially half the population is on food stamps or government assistance, you know, I mean, I had to laugh at these Republican idiots in the 90s and the rest here who essentially let Walmart bring all this stuff over to China and essentially close these factories in the United States, and essentially they were saying, well, you know, they're getting good money from Walmart, they're getting money from about everybody else, and they destroyed their own urban, you know, system here, and agriculture is being destroyed as well. Okay, so what's the end result? I mean, how are you going to be able to pay back this interest on this printed money? And the answer is, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen at all. There is a reason, you know, there is a reason for this, you know, for this saying, you know, against usury. Essentially, the ones who are usuring are these Jews. And what they're doing is they're inflating the currency by what? Oh, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10% a year. And, well, essentially they're making it both in the printing of the money and in whatever interest they get back. But you even have these corporations. They are losing on the margin as the price of their products go up and up and up. But essentially, people are not able to buy it. What's going to happen to them as well? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, Rothschild said this. He said, I care not who makes the laws. I care who prints the money. Isn't that interesting?
Well, like I said, control the money, control the coinage in the courts, and let the rabble have the rest. You know what
That's
I mean?
Right. He controls. They can control it, and it's in the evil system. It's controlled by the evil people, the evil system, and many times they educate the proselyte, and he sells his birthright, and you don't have to be too smart. I told a preacher this one time, you don't have to be too smart. He said, you judge not, you be not judged. You don't have to be smart to see a banker sitting in the front row of the church charging all his brothers and sisters in the auditorium usury at 6 and 8%, and knowing they're never going to get out, even charges the church 6 and 8% when they borrow money. Of course, they can get all they want. He makes sure of that, and he's a so-called Israelite. Well, think about what that says to the community. And these guys live big hog lives, boy. They make big money in these banks up here, in these small banks, maybe, you know, according to what they have to do, okay? And the preachers, they just love them. Oh, they just love them. They never talk about the law of usury. And it's right there, thou shalt not. The question is, what the hell does Israel understand, thou shalt not or thou shalt do? What is so hard to understand about that? And because they don't understand it, as you've been going communicating over and over and over, this evil prevails. The evil prevails even worse. And if you didn't give these folks that, you know, that need these food stamps, I mean, they need them, guys.
Mm-hmm.
They need these food stamps. If they weren't getting these food stamps, Detroit would be rioting till there's no end. Not only that, Hamtramck, Taylor, Warren, Michigan, where these are white people that are collecting them also.
Yeah.
The WIC program for the children. Hell, half our community up here is on WIC and one program or another. It's just, if they didn't have that program, they couldn't feed their children. We have so many, many, many poor folks. I think in the school district that we live in here, I think they were at one time the one of the wages around $12,000 a year for a family of four. They had the statistics. I don't have many more. But then there was 5% of the people made anything from, you know, $25,000 up or whatever. You know, these are some big farms included in there.
It's not great, Gary, because the economy. support not just black and Mexican on welfare or food stamps.
Oh, no,
I know
white folks are.
A lot of white Israelites.
You get out here in the country, I know that, you know, all these young folks are on WIC. I go by where they line up, but I know them. They're on the WIC program, and they're on this program and that program, and I know people my age and as they retire that are on food stamps. Farmers that collect food stamps, and when they go into these old homes, it's all paid for by the federal government. They're white people collecting it. So if it wasn't for that, we'd have riots in the streets. I mean, the poor people are poor. It's just the way it is. There are people that are living on less than $10,000-$12,000 a year, raising children and everything. And they're not making it. They're not making it. And so they have to go to these agencies for the help. I'm sure it's the same way in Missouri. Same way in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. I mean, most of the Anglo-Mestizos, they're on food stamps or whatever. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
What they've done in many cases, what they've done is that they've gotten off of welfare and they've gotten onto disability. You know what I mean? So, Anyway, can I go ahead and have about a 1 minute break? We've been talking for about an hour. I want to have about a 1 minute break and then we'll come back in about a minute or so. All right.
Okay.
All right. Okay, folks. 2 minute break. Hail Victory.